John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Wow, did this set up for an interesting show? We find out about 15 minutes before the show that Broward County is dropping the charges, the four armed robbery charges against Quentin Dunbar. And so that officially now puts Dunbar back on the team, although one thing has to be cleared. You know, he has to come off the commissioner's exempt list. But I know that last week the Players Association filed a grievance on behalf of that, basically saying it's like, hey, he's not been formally charged. And so now the fact that he's not getting the charges from Broward County now puts them in a position to get Dunbar back and make sure that they're now one of the most talented teams in the National Football League and maybe catching up to the San Francisco 49ers. But let's get going with the five biggest stories today. We know which one's going to be number one. It's going to be Dunbar.
Number one.
I would think the NFL would probably be cautious in letting them, letting them play, because it could come out at the end of the day, you know, that the prosecutors drop it and say they all made it up. So I think they wouldn't want to jump the gun on that. In this case, I'm not sure the convicted felons that are alleging this stuff are baked to the best sympathetic victims.
That's David Avalia from the Miami Herald, who covers the court system down there, but it now makes a lot of sense. And what the ruling was, they just simply did not have enough evidence on Dunbar. They had enough on DeAndre Baker to have four charges of armed robbery against him, so he's going to get charged. But the one thing that the Players Association was saying is, okay, if without the formal charges, they should drop out the commissioner's exempt list ruling on Dunbar, and you'd have to think that's going to happen. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the way the court systems are in Broward County, because right now Miami and that whole area is the epicenter of what's going on with the virus. They're not going to have any court cases the rest of this year, presumably no trials the rest of the year. And also, they haven't had one since March. And so what, you can see it was going to take a year and a half to 2 years to get this going. And of course, you can see with the fact that there's murder cases down there and everything else, this wasn't necessarily going to be a high priority, although it's one of the stranger stories we've seen in the National Football League. You know, the allegation that his former attorney, you know, paid off the victims to try to change their testimony. But whatever it is, you know, whatever Dunbar did apparently was not enough to be able to have that go. So we're going to talk to Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News at 10:30 to get the details of DeAndre Baker. We're also going to keep you updated as far as Dunbar. But right now, you know, Dunbar's still on the exempt list, but you'd have to think he's going to come off because now there's no charges against him. And if that's the case, you know, he's considered to be innocent because he's right now not having a chance to be proved guilty.
Number two.
It's a challenge, but you know, we're all up for it. I mean, that's the great thing about being athletes. You know, our bodies are made to adapt in situations, and I think it's going to be fun to see how everybody treats this and, you know, who's going to come out on top. I think this year is going to be special for, you know, whichever team wins the Super Bowl or, you know, however many games we get to play. But, you know, I'm just curious and can't wait to see how everything just plays out.
You can just hear in the voice of DK Metcalf how he continues to grow. I mean, he's worked very hard this offseason. I guess you could say pretty much he's worked hard his entire life to be having a big, tall body like that, you know, having a 4.33 speed in the 40, being able to lift like an offensive lineman. And right now, you can see that he's getting the recognition league-wide because the NFL Network and the players voting on the NFL Network voted him number 81 in the top 100. I wouldn't say right now he's ready to surpass Tyler Lockett, because Tyler Lockett is considered to be one of the best receivers in particularly the NFC, and, you know, is in the 50s as far as his rating from the vote of the players. But I think you can see this is now a great 1-2 punch. And what you can also see is that if Josh Gordon comes off the suspension list, they can make this offense even better, because now what you're looking at is a Seahawk team that is now starting to be loaded on defense, and gets even more loaded now that they're coming off the Jadeveon Clowney pursuit, and looks like they'll try to go to either Everson Griffin or go to Clay Matthews. And so now you're talking adding one or two Pro Bowl players. And, of course, Gordon's been to the Pro Bowl. So now you'd have to think that it's just a waiting game right now for Gordon, because I don't know how many weeks of tests he's going to need as far as the drug tests to see if he's clean. But I would imagine he's going to probably come out clean. So right now things are breaking right for Seattle. It's also breaking right for Metcalf because he continues to work and grow into a Pro Bowl type player.
Number three.
Mariners down to their final out. The pitch, the long swing, and a ground ball back up the middle. Right there, the shortstop Fletcher behind the bag. The throw to first in time to get Long, and the ball game is over. The Angels win it by a score of 6-1 as Dylan Bundy goes all the way this afternoon for the Angels. His third complete game in his major league career, his first of the season, in his third start of the year.
Well, I think that you can see that there was not a good series for the Mariners. Started out okay, but they ended up losing 6-1. Taijuan Walker was not able to do too much. He was able to, couldn't even make it past the fourth inning. He gave up four runs, three walks, hit a batter, and then gave up a home run to Shohei Ohtani, who probably needs to be more batter than pitcher, and that looks like it's going to be the case this year. So now the Mariners dropped to 5-9. Daniel Vogelbach did get a home run, or got the only home run of the game for the Mariners. So it's now going to be against the Colorado Rockies tonight. Yusei Kikuchi is going to be pitching against them. Game time is going to be at 6:40 and 5:30 the pregame. You'll be able to hear it all on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Number four.
There are a couple of scenarios where somewhere down the line, if circumstances change, player could still opt out. The first one would be if they get a new diagnosis that puts them in the higher risk category, things like asthma or type 2 diabetes or a heart condition. The other one would be voluntary if there is a family situation. If a family member passes away, is hospitalized, or otherwise ends up in a medical facility because of COVID-19 or related illnesses, then the player would have 7 days to decide that they want to put their 2020 season to a rest. They would still be eligible for the stipend.
It's officially going to be, it's 67 as far as the count, because that includes Sean Coleman. But, Jake Breedle is going to be also on that list, too, from San Francisco, an offensive lineman. And so we're waiting to find out one more, because I know that Chris Mortensen tweeted out the official count is going to be 69. So one other player we'll find out later on the waiver wire has opted out. And it's been an amazing year for opt-outs. 69 players. New England led the league with 8, including about 4 guys that could be considered starters. Only the Steelers, the Chargers, and the Falcons did not have a player opt out. For Seattle, it was Chance Warmack who opted out, but there were some big names. Donta Hightower, Pro Bowl linebacker. C.J. Mosley, second highest paid linebacker in football at $17 million a year. Patrick Chung, former Pro Bowl safety. And Michael Pierce, to replace it for Linville Joseph in the Minnesota Vikings, a defensive tackle who got $9 million a year. But the opt-outs now are officially, I guess not officially in the books. We still have to find out one more guy. But it was 69 opt-outs as with the deadline was yesterday.
Number five.
I felt good. When I played at Memorial, I got into the flow of the round very quickly. So that was a positive, and I tried to, use the same mentality here, which I was able to do. And I got off to a nice quick start again. And for the better part of the day, I hit the ball, pretty consistently and kept the ball on the correct sides. If I missed, I missed it with the correct angles. I was able to, leave myself nice angles to be able to either get the ball on the green or say par, and I made a couple nice little par putts.
Yeah, so Tiger Woods off to a decent start, shot a 68 with 5 birdies and 3 bogeys. And so at 11 o'clock today, Tiger's group's going to be out there. Jason Day and Brendan Todd were having a first day 5 under par. So that's going to be fun to see the PGA Tour. And at the moment, you can see that he's 2 behind. He's 3 shots off the lead. And par is 70, and he got a 68. So he looks like it's going to be an entertaining weekend, following the PGA in San Francisco and seeing how well Tiger Woods does. Hey, you can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Well, coming up, we're going to go under further review. We're going to talk more about the Quentin Dunbar situation. Again, giving you the update on the news. Charges have been dropped against him, so there's no charges pending. Now it's a matter for the NFL to take him off the exempt list and give him the chance to be able to, get back and get his mind ready to kind of take the starting job away from Trey Flowers. We'll do that along with checking out about the other possibilities of Clay Matthews or Everson Griffin. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under Further Review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, you kind of get the feeling right now momentum is starting to build for the Seahawks, particularly to try to make that Super Bowl run and also try to get this roster on defense that much better. And the news which just came down, you know, 30 minutes ago was that Broward County has decided to drop the charges, the four armed robbery charges against Quentin Dunbar. And now it's a matter of trying to see if he can now be, you know, come off the commissioner exempt list, which you'd have to think they're going to do it, because last week the Players Association filed a grievance saying, no, wait a second, you know, how can you do this? Because he's not really had the formal charge that's going to be, you know, pressed and going into court. And sure enough, Players Association was right. Dunbar was right. Dunbar said he didn't do anything. And I know there's allegations out there that his former attorney was trying to buy off players as far as the people that were there that claimed to be victims. But the courts basically could not find enough evidence to be able to at least hold up the case, which, of course, is going to take a year and a half to 2 years to be able to get into a trial phase. And so now Quentin Dunbar is just now awaiting word, which I don't think it'll come down today, but probably sometime next week, that the exempt list ruling is going to drop. And so all of a sudden, you can see that they got a secondary right now that I think you could say has the equivalent of four Pro Bowl players. Quentin Dunbar is the second best cornerback in coverage, according to Pro Football Focus, right beside Richard Sherman. Sherman was number one last year, according to the PFF. Then you've got Shaquille Griffin, who went to the Pro Bowl last year. Jamal Adams is the best safety in football. He's been to three Pro Bowls. And you got DeAndre Diggs, who's out there as a guy that has been Pro Bowl alternate twice. So now that's part number one that you can see now is upgrades from last year as far as the coverage. They'll be able to play more man coverage. They'll be able to do more blitzing if necessary. But then the other thing is now what's going on the defensive line. And Mike Silver from the NFL Network reported yesterday that the Seahawks are coming off Jadeveon Clowney because his number keeps going up, not down. And so I think they're fed up with it. It's like, okay, time to move on. So the options are going to be Clay Matthews or Everson Griffin, according to Silver, and I don't know which one they're going to go for, but let's hear what Dave Wyman has to say about the idea. Clay Matthews.
I would break it down this way, because we're talking about Everson Griffin here too, right?
Yeah, we'll get to him in a minute, but just Clay Matthews, how does he fit?
They go together, though, to me, because here's the thing. You first of all, they're both from USC, right? One guy in his 12th year, one guy in his 11th year. But if you bring Clay Matthews in here, and they both had the same number of sacks, both mm-hmm. had eight. But if you bring him in here, he's really a Leo, is what you're going to have. You're probably not going to play him at linebacker. And then on the other side, you know, you've got like a defensive end. Well, they don't really have that many of those. You know, they have Rasheem Green and L.J. Collier from what I'm looking at now. If you guys, I don't know if you guys think those guys are question mark guys.
One,
but. Yeah, one certainly is. L.J. Collier has a lot to prove. I believe him in him and everything. Griffin, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, on the other side of him this year, if you look at Danielle Hunter this last year, I mean, he's one of those guys that makes it possible for guys on the other side to rush the passer.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting because I don't know if they can sign both. That might be a lot to ask, but certainly you know that the idea is, even though they were criticized for not saying that they're all in on going for the Super Bowl, I think it's evident that they are all in. You know, they trade two first-round picks and more to get Jamal Adams, and he's a big addition to the defense. Then, of course, they get the Dunbar trade, and so, you know, in the last year, they've made three trades for three possible starting guys in the secondary, and then, you know, if they can add Clay Matthews or Everson Griffin, then you start to look at where this team is, you know, for talent defensively around the National Football League, because, you know, you've got, you know, right now, two official guys in the secondary that are Pro Bowl and two candidates for the Pro Bowl. So that's four Pro Bowl eligible type of guys. Then you got the two linebackers, KJ Wright and also Bobby Wagner. So that's six. And then, you know, if you can add Clay Matthews or Everson Griffin, that would be seven. That's about as good as you think you can get, and certainly gives them so many options. And the options, I think, on Griffin, because I think Griffin Griffin right now would be the better fit, because you know what you're looking at is role players at the Leo position, and that's where Clay Matthews would be. He would just be part of the rotation, but again, a big part of it, because you know he's an aggressive guy that you know, and you've watched it with what he's done with Russell Wilson. He's not afraid to hit a quarterback and knock him to the ground, and so that would be an interesting addition. You know, I think he might come a little cheaper right now than Griffin, but I don't know what Griffin's asking price is. But you can see either one, you're going to get, if you get both guys, you're going to get them for less than what the asking price is of Jadeveon Clowney. But, you know, because what you'd like is you have some versatility with Griffin. You know, again, you know, if LJ Collier is good enough to start as in his second year, then you can put Griffin on the first down, on the early downs, the running downs, to even play the Leo position. You know, if not, you have to make a choice between, you know, whether it's going to be Clay Matthews, whether it's going to be, you know, Daryl Taylor, whether it's going to be Benson Mayoa, because, you know, on the passing downs, Bruce Irvin will go from strong safety, strong outside linebacker to the Leo position. But I don't know, Curtis. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, things are kind of brewing in a very positive way for the Seahawks.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the Dunbar news is kind of not the cherry on top, so to speak, of the offseason, but it's certainly welcome news within that Seahawks facility, considering his status was very much up in the air for the 2020 season. We still don't know quite how long he'll be out. You know, the commissioner's office still kind of surveying the situation, obviously getting the news today that the charges are going to be dropped. Brady Henderson, who we're going to have on at 11 o'clock this morning, he tweets right now. You can follow him at Brady Henderson. He says, on Quentin Dunbar's status with the NFL, a league spokesperson tells ESPN, quote, "We have been monitoring all developments in the matter, which remains under review." Obviously, this is for Dunbar, it's a very positive development, seeing as he won't get charged and he remains a free man and he doesn't have to worry about this situation any further. John, if Dunbar is able to play, let's say he gets suspended for only four games or whatnot, do you think that either increases or decreases Seattle's urgency to fix the offensive line, or at least to add to the offensive line, or not offensive, defensive line, I should say? Or are they going to just go with this, you know, great secondary and hope that, you know, their ability to cover gives the defensive line more time to rush the passer?
No, I get the feeling they're going to add one more guy on the defensive line. Again, they still need to look at a defensive tackle, a run-stopping defensive tackle, and that market's going to be a little bit tougher because, you know, you saw that the three guys opted out who were starters at defensive tackle, particularly led by Eddie Goldman and Star Lutalele, and that's raised the price of all the defensive tackles, whether it's Damon Harrison or, you know, any Tim Jernigan or whoever. But, you know, so that might be a little bit tough, and they might just decide, because the one thing is, okay, thinking about this for a second, I mean, you know, they have the starters, right? Puna Ford and, Reed. And Reed, of course, is, you know, I don't know if he's going to get back to that 10 and a half season, but Jared Reed is a good player. So I think they're good enough at the starters right now. But then also the flexibility they have is that, I mean, you can take the LJ Colliers, the Rasheen Greens, and even the Everson Griffins, and then maybe have them play some defensive tackle when they go second and third down. I mean, that's an option right there. I mean, regardless, this is, I think, a situation where things can be even better, but I think that they want to add one more. And again, I don't know if it's going to be Clay Matthews. I don't know if it's going to be Everson Griffin, but I think somebody will be added there just because I think that's the desire. And all of a sudden, this is a go for it mentality. You know, what the team has been incorrectly accused of not being all in. I know Colin Cowherd has been ramping about that all the time, but you know, you think about where things can go. And so now with the Dunbar, you know, I would have to think that the league has to, you know, because the Players Association is already on this, you know, with the idea. Because now with DeAndre Baker getting the charge, you know they're going to keep the exempt list ruling on him. But given a little bit of time, they need to drop it on Dunbar because, hey, if they're not pressing charges, how can you do anything?
Exactly. You can't do anything. But as we've seen over the last couple of years, it's one thing to be charged, but we saw just last year, Jaron Reed, he wasn't charged, still forced to sit out six games. The problem with the NFL right now is they don't really have a rhyme or reason as to how they dish out their punishments. There's kind of a ballpark as to what guys can get punished by. So Who knows how long Dunbar could be out for, but I imagine it's whatever we thought it was going to be over the last couple of weeks when he was placed on that list, it's not going to be as long as what we thought it was going to be.
No, and how would it be now? You talk about positive momentum with the charges being dropped against Dunbar, the idea that's like, okay, they're pretty well done on the Clowney front, and so now it's either Clay Matthews or Everson Griffin, so I think they'll try to wrap something up on that very quickly, and then you're still waiting on Josh Gordon. I mean, can you think about in the idea that here in about a couple-day period, you could have as many as three guys that have been to the Pro Bowl added to the team? Pro Bowl quality, because again, Dunbar is Pro Bowl quality. So stay tuned on that front. But also, tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or app. Coming up, we're going to get more details on what's going on with Dunbar and also what's going on with DeAndre Baker of the New York Giants. Pat Leonard of the Daily News in New York will be joining us next.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Up front, we have to thank Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News for joining us on what turned out to be a busy hour here because, 45 minutes ago, it was announced that Broward County was dropping charges against Quentin Dunbar, yet they are having four charges of armed robbery continuing against New York Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker. And I know his attorney, Baker's attorney just came out and was saying disgusting and is ripping the Broward County. So I don't know. Pat, could you put this in perspective for us?
Hey, John. Yeah. So as it looked like all along, the case appeared stronger against DeAndre Baker than against Quentin Dunbar. Partially due, of course, interestingly enough, it appears, to the recanted statements of the four alleged victims in regards to what Dunbar did or did not do the night of the alleged incident at this armed robbery that was alleged at the house party on May 13th in Miramar, Florida. Interestingly enough, of course, evidence appears, as I reported a while ago on the evidence in this search warrant that existed that I obtained through public records that showed an apparent payoff cover-up attempt at the lawyer's office, the former lawyer of Quentin Dunbar, Michael Grieco, in Miami. And despite the fact that the evidence appears to show that this occurred, it would seem that the conflicting testimonies now of the initial statements by the alleged victims and then their recanted statements on Dunbar's behalf are connected, despite a lot of other evidence on the contrary, to the fact that the prosecutors are saying there is insufficient evidence to prosecute the Seahawks corner. Interestingly enough, though, the night of the initial warrant that was released the initial affidavit when the warrant was executed for their arrests, it was pretty consistent that the alleged victims were saying that DeAndre Baker had a gun. It was not consistent right from the jump whether Quentin Dunbar did or not. So the combination of the conflicting early testimonies and then it appears the recanted statements on Dunbar's behalf, even if they were done allegedly in this payoff manner, seem to exonerate him, so to speak. Well, not exonerate, but it leads to no pressing of charges compared to DeAndre Baker. And I would add, John, even though in the search warrant that described the alleged payoff, it refers to that the night of the alleged incident, the officer's body-worn cameras show one of the victims, as they arrive, holding up a picture of Quentin Dunbar for the officers to look at, presumably on a phone. And so despite strong evidence like that, an individual would seem to have been on scene and potentially involved, there are, of course, other circumstances now that seem to lead to Dunbar not being charged here.
Now, what happened as far as Baker? Because it went from like eight charges to four of armed robbery. What seemed to be the adjustment there?
I don't know exactly yet. I think from what I can gather so far, it looks like the fact that this is a punishable by life felony
the robbery with a firearm, or in layman's terms, armed robbery in Florida. It comes with a mandatory minimum of 10 years and a maximum of life in prison. It appears as if all of the allegations are simply rolled into those charges, that the aggravated assault maybe was an extraneous ad to kind of describe the nature of the incident, maybe. I don't have a firm answer for you on that, but it looks as if, based on what he faces if convicted, that the prosecutors believed that robbery with a firearm encapsulated everything that DeAndre Baker is accused of.
Now, I know when this story came up, there was, you know, rumblings that the Giants would cut him. I'm sure that Pat Hamlin and them haven't even prepared a statement yet, because it's been so quick. But what do you think that the Giants do, knowing that the this Baker story is going to continue for a year and a half to 2 years? Because I know, talking to the reporters down in Miami, what they're saying is that there hasn't been a trial since March of this past year, and there may not be any the rest of the year. So with the court system that backed up, this case for Baker now is going to take a year and a half to 2 years.
Right. So I was told when I reported, I believe it was in early July, on the search warrant and the allegations of the cover-up payoff, I was told by multiple sources within the Giants building that we should not expect DeAndre Baker to be on their team much longer. Now, that did not put a definite timeline on it. Of course, not long after the league placed him on the commissioner exempt list. But my understanding and how I reported that was that eventually this is headed towards the Giants cutting him. It's just a matter of when, not if. And that is still what I believe. In the immediate aftermath of the formal charges being filed today, as of this exact moment, the Giants have not made any comment one way or another to me on any status of Baker's changing. The NFL, an NFL spokesman, simply responded, "We have been monitoring all developments in the matter, which remains under review." So as of this exact moment, nothing has occurred. But frankly, John, based on my report in July, and as I felt throughout this process since then, it is when, not if, and I would not expect DeAndre Baker to ever wear a Giants uniform again, my opinion.
I can understand it. By the way, if you want to get under Pat Hamlin's skin, guess where he interned at a place that I was at the Pittsburgh Press. He interned at the Pittsburgh Press when I was there.
Oh, so he was a member of the community.
Yeah, that's why he stays out of the press box now. He goes down to the field so he can avoid being in the press box. But no, he interned at the press when I was there. So kind of interesting to see. Good guy, good guy, and a good friend. Yes. So, but getting back to the Baker. Now, I know it seemed from the very beginning that the attorneys for Baker and Dunbar were at odds, because, you know, it seemed like, you know, Baker's attorney was pressing one way, Dunbar's attorney was pressing another way, and it didn't seem that they were together.
Right. Yes. No, exactly. It certainly seemed right from the jump that even the way that they turned themselves in at different times, they had different representation. And again, too, it's really odd that right from the get-go, they were not treated as kind of, it didn't look like they were acting as two as one. It looked like they were acting as separate individuals in the case. And you could see, once you read that initial arrest warrant, you could see that the allegations were stronger against Baker. Not that there were not strong allegations against Dunbar, but it did appear that right from the get-go, Baker was pretty consistently, or very consistently, accused across the board by the alleged victims of having a gun and pointing it at people and accusing or telling one of his accomplices to shoot one of the alleged victims. And thankfully he did not shoot him. And Dunbar was described as being a part of the armed robbery and helping to rob people. But there was conflicting information early on of whether he even had a gun. But you're absolutely right. Early on, it was certainly alarming and kind of surprising to see these things break off in a couple different directions. I am still, even though it doesn't surprise me that Dunbar isn't being charged because of the recanted statements and their presence, it doesn't surprise me, but it still alarms me in the sense that there really is so much, including this payoff cover-up situation. You know, obviously, it wasn't Baker's attorney whose office these recanted statements happened at. It isn't Baker's attorney's office where 60 grand or 55 grand exchanged hands, allegedly, according to this evidence that showed up in this search warrant. This was Quentin Dunbar's former attorney, who then recused himself from the case, who now is reportedly under investigation by the Florida Bar Association. So, you know, the presence of facts like that, the fact that the witness, Dominic Johnson, who knows both Dunbar and Baker, in that search warrant places essentially both in NFL players at the scene, and in his Instagram messages to people describes how he got people to say that these guys didn't do what they say they did, that they didn't rob them like they did. He mentions that he brought three NFL players to the party, and that everything went wrong and that he was being blamed. But so the presence of that kind of evidence does make you kind of raise your eyebrows and shake your head and wonder how Dunbar isn't being charged, even though, of course, like we said right off the bat, there are obvious reasons based on the inconsistencies in these testimonies why it looks like you could poke holes in the case against him as well.
What do you, did the Players Association file a grievance on the exempt ruling for Baker? Because I know I saw the grievance that the Players Association did on with Quentin Dunbar, because basically saying it's like, hey, he's not been formally charged. How can you have him on the exempt list? So what did they do one for Baker?
Yes. Baker did appeal immediately. Though I just saw somebody report, I didn't follow up on this yet, but I just saw somebody report that the appeal would be void at this juncture if he is formally charged, then you wouldn't win the appeal, or it would just be eliminated. I don't know if that's fact or not. I saw somebody reporting that a few minutes ago. To your point earlier too, before anything like that is resolved, I would expect swift action from the NFL and the Giants in the near future. But again, like you said, these things progress and take time, and information trickles out here and there. And like you said, this case, depending on when the next court date is and how this progresses, he's on the exempt list, so he's not near the team, and he won't be near the team until this is over. I guess you could say, you know, they could let it play out time-wise from the Giants' angle, although evidence does continue to mount not in his favor. His attorney, it should be noted, and you dropped this right off the bat, or you mentioned this right off the bat, but his attorney is lashing out right now on Instagram, angered about he's continuing to reference what he referenced in July, which is the fact that he is saying that DeAndre Baker there was an extortion attempt on behalf of these alleged victims to try and extort money from these wealthy NFL players, and that he had alerted law enforcement of this fact and believes that it appears that whether he believes he's being ignored or whether something happened not in good faith here, but that appears to be his argument here. He's writing, you know, we will expose the hypocrisy at the case filing level. He's accusing the state attorney of teaming up with convicted felons, he calls the alleged victims, and offered them to come in and explain why they changed their stories multiple times without fear of prosecution. So he feels like his client is being unfairly treated, while others who apparently have criminal records are given more of the benefit of the doubt. That seems to be his argument right now.
Very interesting. Hey, Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News, thank you so much on this busy day for taking time out and explaining this very unusual story. Hey, listen, I've covered football almost, five decades, and this is one of the more unusual ones been around.
Keep watching, John. It's going to get weirder.
Yeah. Well, maybe not for Dunbar, but at least it will be for Baker. Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Seahawks training camp is here, and it's time for two-a-days on 710 ESPN Seattle starting August 17th. Join us each weekday for an exclusive access to training camp with a daily roundup from 11 a.m. to noon featuring myself or experts from the Seahawks, Seahawk experts, and they'll be taking a chance to interact with 710 hosts on a live video chat each afternoon at 710sports.com. 710 Seattle is your access pass to Seahawks training camp with two-a-days starting August 17th. Coming up, we'll catch you up on the National Football League Behind the Lines. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, plenty to review here as we go behind the lines to get you up to date on the National Football League. And certainly the big story now being Quentin Dunbar being at least having the charges dropped against him. And now it's a matter of what the NFL wants to do as far as the exempt list. I mean, the fact that he was in that situation where they continue to keep him on the exempt list, would they have some kind of a ruling on a suspension? But I know the Players Association has already been, you know, 1 week into trying to fight what's going on, the appeal of that ruling. And so we'll see where that goes. So I think that's going to be now the big one. But what's going to be interesting to see in the next week, what all happens, because there's three elements right now that seem to be going that could give the Seahawks the momentum to maybe equal or top the San Francisco 49ers for talent. Okay, and again, that's in this division, and maybe you could say around the National Football League. But if Dunbar is going to be off the exempt list, now they've got four Pro Bowl caliber guys in the secondary. And that's even though, you know, Diggs has not been there yet. Quandre at least has been to two alternate twice in the National Football League. And, you know, Dunbar is considered, at least by Pro Football Focus, the second best coverage cornerback in the league. So that would be there. Then, you know, it looks like they've come off the idea of tired of just doing the Jadeveon Clowney front. And so they can now shift off and see if they want to add Clay Matthews or if they want to add Everson Griffin. And then the third element is at some point here reasonably soon, they'll find out about Josh Gordon. And so if Josh Gordon is cleared, you think it's pretty evident that he's going to, you know, come here and stay in Seattle. He's been staying in Seattle for a good portion of the offseason. And so you're talking now, you know, three Pro Bowl caliber guys, one that's been cleared to a degree, at least by the court systems, and then two, if they, you know, get Matthews or if they end up getting Griffin, I mean, boy, you're talking about a pretty good defense right now.
Yeah, you're talking about a really good defense, a really good secondary, and you know, John, that's just how the Seahawks have preferred to build that defense under Pete Carroll and John Schneider, is from the secondary forward. And this year, I think this defense kind of, in terms of what I'm seeing, kind of reminds me of the 2012 defense, where you had really good linebacking, you had a tremendous secondary. The defensive line was the biggest question mark that year, where Chris Clemons was the biggest contributor in terms of rushing the passer. You know, the Seahawks right now, there's still a lot of question marks as to who is going to be their number one guy in terms of rushing the passer. You've got Bruce Irvin, Benson Mayoa, maybe they get Everson Griffin, who I think you and I have both made known that we're more partial to the Seahawks signing him in terms of fit rather than Clay Matthews. To me, that sort of defense, it's not one that I think I would put anywhere near the top five or top ten, but with how the Seahawks offense has been over the last couple of years, you can get by with a really great offense and a middle-of-the-road defense. I mean, just look at the Kansas City Chiefs last year. They won the Super Bowl, and their defense wasn't necessarily considered a top five or maybe even a top ten defense.
Yeah, but I would have to think that this defense would be clearly top ten, not only for what they are for talent, if they can get you know, one more element there, Matthews or Griffin, and that they get the exempt list lifted off of Dunbar. I would say it's clearly top ten. And the reason I say that is that you know, you look and you see how many Pro Bowl caliber guys. If you buy the idea that even though Diggs has not been to the Pro Bowl and Dunbar has not been to the Pro Bowl, but you know, they're close enough to be considered Pro Bowl candidates. So that's four guys in the secondary. You know, KJ Wright's been to the Pro Bowl. Bobby Wagner was in the Pro Bowl for many years and right now is the best middle linebacker in football. So that's six Pro Bowl caliber guys. And then, you know, Jaron Reed, I mean, you know, based on the fact that he got paid this year. He didn't have the great year last year because of the six-game suspension. But what you're looking at is he has the possibility of, you know, being a Pro Bowl guy if he gets good rush from the outside. And so that would be two on the defensive line. You're talking about, you know, eight Pro Bowl caliber guys on defense. There's not many teams that have that. And, you know, one of the things that we look at is that, do you know what other coach likes to build from the secondary to the front?
It's Bill Belichick.
That's correct. Yeah, because you think about it, you know, one of the things I think you know, bothered the Seahawks is that they didn't want to pay $17, $18 million for a defensive end. At one point, they did get the offer to Clowney to $16 million, and his head was still spinning, you know, trying to go for the $17, $18 million, so it never worked out there. And you know, Bill Belichick, I mean, he let Chandler Jones go. He didn't want to pay the $18 million for Trey Flowers, but yet you look at the team right now, I don't know how good it's going to be in New England, but, you know, they've got a great secondary for three cover guys that are among the better man-to-man guys on defense. And so what's also aiding the Seahawks is they have so many games against either coaching changes, you know, three in the NFC East, and they have so many games against young quarterbacks that, you know, they can take advantage of it with an experienced defense.
They absolutely can. And, John, on the other side of this story, we've got DeAndre Baker, who is now facing four charges officially, four robbery charges. Where do you think that puts him with the Giants? Do they think... Do you think at all they might try to void his contract and release him, or are they going to wait this out?
What they should do is, and I think, you know, from Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News, who was nice enough to take time in his busy day to talk to us, I mean, initially it looked like they'd let him go. My read would be, depending on the exemplar status, you want to try to void the contract because you have to take some cap hits. Now, I think as Pat Leonard said, he's not going to be with the team this year. They're going to at some point clear that up and get rid of him. How they get rid of him, still to be determined. Because again, if you get suspended, then you can void any of the guarantees, you know, because first round picks, you know, get guarantees, and he's a former first round pick. So that you almost like to void that so you don't have to take the cap hit. But they got plenty of cap room to be able to do that. Hey, be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we're going to check in with Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.